Can someone turn it on? Thank you. Hare Krishna. Thank you all for coming to our Sunday feast program. Many of you know that Friday was the appearance day of Lord Nrisimha Dev, the avatar of Krishna. How many of you were able to come to our Friday program here? Okay. Quite a few, and I'm sure that quite a few were not. Obviously, it's a work day, and we have a little different group of people come on Sunday. So I wanted to continue that theme a little bit today and talk about not only the appearance day of Lord Nrisimha Dev, incarnation of Krishna, but also of his great devotee, Arahant Maharaj. Now, it's interesting that in the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are 10 chapters starting from the story of Jaya and Vijaya, the gatekeepers, all the way to the end of Hiranyakasipu and Prahlad Maharaj. And out of those 10 chapters, how many verses do you think Lord Nrisimha Dev speaks? Well, it's 13. Lord Nrisimha Dev speaks 13 verses out of all of the 3,400 verses. But we must say his appearance is one of the most dramatic and inspiring scenes in all of Vedic literature. And Lord Nrisimha Dev continues to inspire the devotees so much in terms of his protection and our loving relationship with him, as he gives such great love and protection to all of his devotees. And Prabhupada taught us to beseech that protection of Lord Nrisimha Dev, just as in the prayers we just chanted it after the end of every Arti ceremony that you just all participated in. Hare Krishna. I feel like I'm shouting, but nothing is coming out. Okay.
There we go. That's better. Okay, great. Anyway, out of 10 chapters of the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Nrisimha Dev only speaks 13 verses. Most of the descriptions, most of the verses are given to the teachings of Prahlad Maharaj, the great devotee of Nrisimha Dev. So, we want to speak not only about Lord Nrisimha Dev's appearance, but primarily I want to speak about the teachings of Prahlad Maharaj. After all, Prahlad was one of the 12 Mahajans, the great authorities on Vedic knowledge and great on Vedic wisdom. And so he speaks with great authority on this philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So I'm trying to think how to give the 2-minute Reader's Digest version of the entire story of Lord Nrisimha's appearance. Since on Friday, for those of you who were here in the morning,
we had a very
wonderful full explanation of Lord
Nrisimha Dev's appearance that we heard in our Srimad Bhagavatam class. He comes and goes. So, anyway, as we know, Lord Hiranyakasipu, through great austerity, became very powerful. He was a great demon. He took over the entire universe, defeated all of the demigods. They were very much in fear. They approached Lord Brahma. They approached Lord Vishnu, actually. He says, "Don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. I will soon appear." Prahlad Maharaj is Hiranyakashipu's son. While he was in the womb of his mother, Narada Muni, the great Vaishnava devotee, tells him, preaches to him the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So he's born a great devotee, much to the chagrin of his father, who was an avowed atheist, an avowed enemy of Vishnu and Krishna. So Prahlad Maharaj grows up, he's 5 years old, and he begins to talk about Krishna consciousness, about spiritual life. His father is totally opposed to it. He tries to stop him. He tells the teacher, Sandanamarga, please instruct him properly on what he needs to know to be a king. Teach him about diplomacy, about how to rule, how to manage. These are the important things. So they try to do that, but he was not interested. He was only interested in philosophy, chanting Hare Krishna. And then he began to talk to his young friends, and he convinced them to all become devotees. Hiranyakasipu becomes more and more angry, so he finally tries to kill his son, Prahlad Maharaj, believe it or not, in so many ways. But he was unsuccessful every time. He was always defeated. He threw him off a cliff, and somehow he was caught, and he was saved. Drinking poison, nothing happened. So on and so on. Everything they tried to do, nothing could touch Prahlad Maharaj, he remained just simply chanting in great faith and love and devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So finally, Hiranyakasipu takes him in great anger and says, "Where does your strength come from? I can see you're very powerful." He said, Prahlad says, "Same place yours comes from Vishnu." "Where is this Vishnu?" "He's everywhere." "Oh, he's everywhere. Is he here? Is he there? Is he in this pillar?" "Yes, even in that pillar." Hiranyakasipu smashes the pillar, and out bursts the great, glorious, fearsome feature of Lord Nrisingadev, half man, half lion. Anyway, a fight ensues. Hiranyakasipu is killed. Only Prahlad Maharaj can come and pacify the Lord because he's in this angry mood. And there's a whole backstory to that, why he came, why he did this pastime of fighting, how Hiranyakasipu had all these boons to be immortal, but they were defeated by the cleverness, the intelligence of Lord Vishnu. At any rate, so Prahlad Maharaj continues speaking in this way. And throughout these different talks to his schoolmates, he speaks to his father, he speaks in conversation with the Lord. Touched something I shouldn't have, knocked out the microphone. Okay, Haribol, still on? Okay, we're on again. I have to keep my hands off. Sit on him. Okay. At any rate, there are wonderful teachings of Prahlad Maharaj about Vaishnava Krishna conscious philosophy. These are found throughout the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and they're also captured in a little booklet that BBT printed called The Transcendental Teachings of Prahlad Maharaj. Is that still in print? I don't know if it is or not. But it was this wonderful little book, and I took some of my inspiration from that, how Prabhupada, and it was a series of lectures on the seventh canto, I think fifth or sixth chapter of Srila Prabhupada gave. And so where Prabhupada enunciated the essence of these teachings of Prahlad. So, a summary I came up with, and there's probably many other points, but I found seven basic points of teachings that Prahlad Maharaj gave us. One, the necessity of every human being to take up spiritual life. And two is somewhat the corollary of that, avoid entanglement in material life. Three, the devotee of God does not distinguish between friends and enemies. Four, the goal of life is to see God everywhere and everything. Five, the most advanced devotees of God, of Krishna, desire nothing but devotional service, no material desire. Six, the devotee feels compassion for all living entities. And seven, the devotee has complete surrender, complete faith that Krishna will offer all protection. So, I'd like to go through some of these points. First, the necessity to take up spiritual life. So I didn't have a single verse to start the class as we usually do, a Bhagavad Gita verse or whatever, because I have a verse to illustrate all of these points. So the first one is Srimad Bhagavatam 7.6.1, where Prahlad Maharaj instructs his schoolmates. Prahlad Maharaj said, "One who is sufficiently intelligent should use the human form of body from the very beginning of life. In other words, from the tender age of childhood, to practice the activities of devotional service, giving up all other engagements. The human body is most rarely achieved, and although temporary, like other bodies, it is meaningful because in human life one can perform devotional service. Even a slight amount of sincere devotional service can give one complete perfection." So this is a very, very important verse explaining the necessity of taking up God consciousness or spiritual life while we have this human form of life. There are 8,400,000 different species of life according to the Vedas, and we may finally achieve the human form of life, which is considered very rare. And this point here, Srila Prabhupada would say over and over again in lectures, didn't he? When you listen to Prabhupada, he'd say, "Now that you have this human form of life, take it very seriously. Take this opportunity, because it is a rare opportunity." And that's what Prahlad was trying to say. He was specifically talking to his five-year-old schoolmates, and he was trying to convince them that what is a good time to take up spiritual life? Now. We all tend to assume we will become serious at some future time. We do. We all do that, right? You know, I'm 68 years old, and I'm thinking, well, when I get old, you know, I'll have to be really become serious about Krishna consciousness, you know. Or I'll be saying that when I'm 78, and then who knows. Anyway, we have to all take this very much to heart. So Prahlad explains, we tend to waste our life. Half of our life is spent in sleeping, and then we play in youth, family life. You all know, right? You've all experienced family life, work, jobs, family. Everyone becomes very busy, very preoccupied. And then in old age, one becomes very attached, and one becomes weak, and one doesn't have so much energy. Oh, it's too hard to get up from Angul Aarti, right? You know, it gets difficult. So we tend to forget spiritual life. Spiritual life becomes forgotten because we're always too busy throughout our life. So this is what one of Prahlad Maharaj's most important instructions. Take up spiritual life while you have intelligence in the human form of the human body, in the human form of life to do so, right? Actually, you know, it's only the human form of life that has fully developed consciousness enough to actually, I mean, even though we see that, and any of you who have been around animals, you know, there is some intelligence there. I mean, if you're around dogs or cats or cows or anything, you see there's consciousness, there's feeling. It's there. But do they have philosophical discussions with one another? No. No. Only human beings can fully understand God consciousness and philosophy by dint of that higher intelligence. Okay? So, while we are wanting to taking up spiritual life, that's juxtaposed by its corollary that we want to avoid over-entanglement in material life. So this is from 755. Prahlad Maharaj replied, O best of the Asuras, king of the demons, that's of course his father, Hiranyakasipu, as far as I have learned from my spiritual master, any person who has accepted a temporary body and temporary household life is certainly embarrassed by anxiety because of falling in a dark well where there's no water but only suffering. This is the famous dark well verse. One should give up his position and go to the forest, Vana. More clearly, one should go to Vrindavan where only Krishna consciousness is prevalent and should thus take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we have a temporary body, and even our temporary household life, our temporary family, our temporary job, everything we have is temporary. It doesn't last. The happiness we experience doesn't last. The possessions we have will not last. There's even common expressions to say you can't take it with you. Everybody knows this intuitively, instinctively. Everybody knows that whatever we have is limited and temporary and we'll lose it. But we act as though we'll keep it forever, right? Remember when Yamaraj answered the question of the Yaksha? You know, the whole story, the brothers drowning in the pond. Anyway, he answered these questions to revive his brothers. And the Yaksha asked him, what is the most amazing thing? And what did Yudhishthira say? I've read several different versions of exactly, but it's something to the effect of the most amazing thing is that we see everyone around us die, but somehow or another we think it'll never happen to us. Right? So that's the attachment that we have in this material world and the illusion that it puts us into that is not a temporary situation. In the transcendental teachings of Prahlad Maharaj in Chapter 3, Srila Prabhupada explains this a little more. He says, Prahlad Maharaj says that everyone is attached to family affection. If one is attached to family affairs, he cannot control his senses. Naturally, everyone wants to love someone. Society, friendship, and love are needed. They are demands of the spirit soul, but they are pervertedly reflected. I have seen that many ladies and gentlemen in your country have no family life, but they have placed their love in cats and dogs. Because they want to love someone, but do not have someone suitable, they place their valuable love in cats and dogs. Our concern is to transfer this love, which has to be placed somewhere, to Krishna. This is Krishna consciousness. If you transfer your love to Krishna, that is perfection. But now, because people are frustrated and cheated, they do not know where to place their love. Everyone is entangled by material love. It's very difficult to develop spiritual life when one is advanced in material love because this bondage of love is very strong. Therefore, Prahlad proposes that one should learn Krishna consciousness from childhood. So this is an important explanation, and there's a subtlety here because it's not just saying all material life is bad, all material love is bad, it's just, you know, inherently bad and evil. No. What Prabhupada is really saying is, and it's not so much material love is bad, but because, of course, it's temporary, it's misguided, It prevents us from seeing our real loving relationship with Krishna. That's the problem. That's the real problem with material love and material life and material affairs, is it distracts us from the reality of our real life, of the transcendental position of the soul, of the Atma, the pure spirit soul in loving relationship of devotional service with Krishna. That's what makes us happy. That is our Sanatana Dharma, our eternal constitutional position. And by becoming so involved in material affairs, we tend to forget that. So that is the problem, forgetfulness of Krishna. Remember those two primary principles? The most important principles of Krishna consciousness? Always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. Very simple. If you can do that, you got it. Your life's perfect. But not easier said than done, right? So part of the way that we always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna, is not to become too much involved in material life. Now that brings up a question. Most of us are very involved in material life. At least many in this community, particularly are householders. Many of us are working. Some of us are happily retired. But those of you unfortunate people who are still working, it's not always easy. It isn't. Because what can you do? You have to associate with non-devotees. You have to associate with materialistic people. You're with around them all day. We visit our families. Unless they're devotees, you know, we have love for them. We have relationship with them. But, you know, what do you do in the association of non-devotees? The best answer I ever heard, and I'll have to give proper credit because I heard this in a lecture by Niranjana Swami once, where he was quoting Bhaktivinoda Thakur, where Bhaktivinoda Thakur explained. He said, while we must often associate with materialistic or worldly people, we do not give our hearts to them. We save our hearts for the devotees. And to me, that was very, very profound. It's very simple and profound. Yes, you can associate. You can even try to help others. You can have relationships. But you don't deeply give your heart to those who are not actually interested in spiritual life and who will not help us in spiritual life, or that we cannot help them in spiritual life. We give our hearts to the Vaishnavas, to the devotees of God, because we're involved in a mutual process of helping one another to grow and to advance in spiritual life. Okay. Third point. The devotee does not distinguish between friends and enemies. Another famous point by Prahlad. 7.5.12. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead is pleased with the living entity because of his devotional service, one becomes a pandit and does not distinguish between enemies, friends, and himself. Intelligent, he then thinks every one of us is an eternal servant of God, and therefore we are not different from one another. Srila Prabhupada's purport, he says, we are all actually eternal servants of Krishna, but under the influence of the external energy, we think that we are separately situated from the Supreme Personality of Godhead as friends and enemies of one another. Other places, Prabhupada said, this is what diplomacy means, diplomatic behavior, seeing friends, enemies. This person is for me, this person is against me. Vaishnavas say that since everyone is a servant of the Lord, everyone is on the same platform. Therefore, a Vaishnava treats other living entities neither as friends nor as enemies, but instead tries to spread Krishna consciousness, teaching everyone that we are all one as servants of the Supreme Lord. So that's a very important realization for us to have, to understand the spiritual equality. Yes, materially, people are different. Some people are more intelligent, some are less intelligent, some are more this, more that. There are differences. But that is all on the material, bodily concept of life. Spiritually, we are all equal. We are all Vaishnavas, well, ultimately Vaishnavas. We are all sons and daughters of Krishna. Actually, we are neither gender. Krishna is the supreme male. Everyone else is Prakriti. But be that as it may, we are all equal with the common father, Krishna. Bhagavad Gita 5.18 says, Pandita Samadarshana, the sage, the pandit, sees with equal vision. does not distinguish between the Brahmin, the outcast, the elephant, you know, whatever. Even between different species of life, what to speak of between different human beings. We also have this concept that's given several times. It's very important. It's in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's in Nectar Devotion, it's in Srimad Bhagavatam in the 11th canto. There's three or four different places where the categories of devotees are discussed, which are Kanishtha Adhikari, Madhyam Adhikari, and Uttam Adhikari. These are distinctions, not that we go around classifying, oh, you're an advanced devotee, you're not. It's not meant for that. It's meant to understand how we are all situated somewhere along the progression of Krishna consciousness. And the topmost devotee is called Uttama Adhikari. And the Uttama Adhikari sees oneness, that we are all servants of Krishna. So they have compassion towards all conditioned souls in the material world, but they see that everyone is ultimately servant of Krishna. And we just occupy different material bodies. So that is one of the key teachings of Prahlad Maharaj. Have not seen friends and enemies, but seen all of us as servant of Krishna. Point number four. The goal of life is to see God everywhere. It's from 787. Hiranyakasipu says, by whose power has a rascal like you become so impudent that you appear fearless and overstep my power to rule you? And Prahlad Maharaj says, my dear king, the source of my strength, of which you are asking, is also the source of yours. Indeed, the original source of all kinds of strength is one. He is not only your strength or mine, but the only strength for everyone. Without him, no one can get any strength. Whether moving or not moving, superior or inferior, everyone, including Lord Brahma, is controlled by the strength of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So because Prahlad Maharaj's faith was so strong, as we were saying earlier, Lord Nrisimhadev burst out of the pillar, proving his words. Because he said, yes, Father, God is everywhere. Is he here? Lord Nrisimhadev said, yes, I am here also. So Krishna is everywhere, but not always so easy to see. And that doesn't mean that Krishna has spread himself into everything, and this is sort of an impersonal Brahman conception, that everything is God and God is everything. When we say God is within everything, we don't mean that God has lost his individuality, that he has lost identity, or that he has lost personality. Because Krishna, of course, remains as Bhagavan, he expands himself as Paramatma, and he also expands himself as the Brahman, as the impersonal energy or the Brahma-jyoti. So we have to have the eyes to see Krishna. Not always so easy. We say Krishna is everywhere, but not so easy to see Krishna. Actually, Prabhupada said we first see through hearing, but that's another point. A very nice verse in the Brahma Samhita, text 36, that goes, Pramanjana Tirita Bhakti Valochyanena. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is Shyamasundar, Krishna himself, with inconceivable, innumerable attributes, whom the pure devotees see in their heart of hearts, the eye of devotion tinged with a salve of love. I think this is such a beautiful poetic verse. When you think about it, how we see Krishna through the heart of pure devotion. In other words, it's not that we see through our eyes, but we see through devotion, through our hearts. And that heart must be tinged, and the eye must be tinged the salve of love of God. So Krishna becomes visible in proportion to the purification of our hearts. To the degree that we become purified, the degree that we surrender to God, to that degree, he reveals himself to us. So we don't see Krishna by a mechanical process, but we see Krishna when he reveals himself, and that is based upon devotion. And that devotion begins with a process. Another, of course, I didn't even mention this one. One of Prahlad Maharaj's most famous verses, Shravanam, Kirtan, right? Vishnu Smaranam, the nine processes of devotional service. So, Shravanam, Kirtanam begins with hearing, the first process of Krishna consciousness. As we saw, Prahlad Maharaj, he didn't see Krishna. he heard about Krishna while he was in the womb from Narada Muni, his guru. Narada Muni was speaking to his mother, and he heard. So for that process of hearing, he became a pure devotee. He became completely convinced, became completely advanced, completely surrendered to Krishna, understood Krishna through hearing about it, through the words of his exalted spiritual master, Narada. Yeah. So we realize God through devotional service, by chanting his holy name, by hearing his pastimes. Srila Prabhupada often quoted his spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj. He says, don't try to see Krishna, but let Krishna see you by your service. Okay? And Krishna will reveal himself in due course of time through the process of bhakti, through sadhana. Point number five. I was just saying about half an hour ago that you should never really try to present more than about 3 points of philosophy during a class. So here I'm up to seven, so try to remember three of these. Number five, the most advanced devotee desires nothing but devotional service. Now, after it's all over, Aranyakasipu kills, Arunachandra kills Aranyakasipu. He's roaring. Prahlad comes, pacifies him, offers prayers to him. Arunachandra asks, says, please, I will give you any benediction you want. And he says, no, I don't really want anything. He says in 7:10, 4 through 6, Prahlad says, you are so kind to your devotee that you cannot induce him to do something unbeneficial for him. On the other hand, one who desires some material benefit in exchange for devotional service cannot be your pure devotee. Indeed, he is no better than a merchant who wants profit in exchange for service. Oh, my Lord, I am your unmotivated servant, and you are my eternal master. There is no need of our being anything other than master and servant. You are naturally my master. I'm naturally a servant. We have no other relationship. This is the platform of pure devotional service. This is Anyabhilashadashunyam from Bhagavad-gita 1.1.11, the definition of devotional service, which is to have no desires other than the service of Lord Krishna, having no material desires. And, of course, continues Anukalyena Krishnanushilanam, that one must serve Krishna favorably, fully engaged in devotional service. So this is the platform of the devotee. He's not looking for something in exchange. Sometimes we see this in other religions, that it's more like a bargaining process. Oh, please, Lord, give me this, and then I will do this. You know, oh, Lord, please give me my daily bread. You know, Prabhupada criticized this, but he did say, in fairness, he said 1,000 times better to at least approach God for your daily bread than never to acknowledge God at all. So it's a good step. It's a good step to at least see that God is the provider, that God is the benefactor, that everything is coming from him, and appreciating that. But higher than that is not to ask something from Krishna, but to give to Krishna, to want to serve Krishna, to offer everything in one's life to Krishna. So in our very, very wonderful and beautiful deity worship, which we get the sublime privilege of seeing regularly here, we see that the flowers are offered to Krishna, nice prasadam, foodstuffs are offered to Krishna, all kinds of nice articles, offerings. So much love and devotion is gone into just giving to Krishna. It's not asking Krishna, give me this, give me that. It's Krishna, please accept my offering. But you know what happens? A remarkable thing happens. Krishna gives us everything in return. The devotee doesn't even need to ask. Everything is given to the devotee. Most importantly, spiritual life. You know, the ecstasy, the bliss, the wonderful experience, the devotional service is like awarded to the devotee without asking because of his service. So this is the quality of real devotional service. And that's something I think that distinguishes Vaishnavism, Krishna consciousness, a little bit from some other religions. Now, it's there in other religions, but I don't think it's enunciated quite as clearly, purely, you know, and strongly as in the Krishna conscious philosophy. So like in the Srimad Bhagavatam 1:26, devotional service is described as the haitukiya priyata. That service is unmotivated and uninterrupted. So this is the type of what we call pure devotional service that Prahlad Maharaj was teaching. Next point. You got these all memorized? Okay. We're up to point six. Point six was compassion for all living entities. Prahlad Maharaj exemplified this, and Prabhupada often talked about Prahlad as being the exemplar of compassion. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu talked about Prahlad Maharaj because when in Chaitanya Leela, Prahlad Maharaj came as Vasudev Dutta. And Vasudev Dutta was famous for expressing his great compassion. He said, let me take the karma of every living entity in this entire universe upon my head. Let me suffer all of their sins and let them all go back to Godhead. Now that's pretty remarkable. If most of us said that, you think, oh yeah, right. You know? Yeah, he meant it. This was heartfelt. He totally believed it. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, that is not very astonishing because he is actually Prahlad Maharaj. This was Prahlad's mood. So 7943, Prahlad says, O best of great personalities, I am not at all afraid of material existence. For wherever I stay in you, I am fully absorbed in your thoughts of your glories and activities. My concern is only for the fools and rascals who are making elaborate plans for material happiness, maintaining their families, societies, and country. I am simply concerned with love for them. Now, this is an interesting contrast because on one hand, you think, well, he's calling them fools, buddha. Yes, they're foolish because they're so absorbed in material life, they're forgetting who they are. They're forgetting the goal of life. But is he contemptful? Does he despise them? Does he No. He is concerned for them out of love, feeling this Vaishnav compassion. So this compassion is exemplified by all the great devotees in the Lord. Srila Prabhupada, the advanced age of almost 70 years old, comes to America, no money, practically no friends, practically no contacts, one name on a piece of paper in Butler, Pennsylvania. Why does he do this? Why does he leave the comfort of his homeland to come to America, a place that he had no idea what he would experience? In fact, he thought he wouldn't even be able to eat anything. He thought all they eat was meat here. There weren't even any vegetables or fruit or anything. At any rate, why did he do this? Out of compassion, out of love for the living entities, to try to help all of us, to save us from material life and material suffering. That is the mood of the Vaishnav devotee of the Lord. How to save the living entities from having to suffer in this life and future lives. So Prahlad Maharaj, after he said, I'm not a merchant, I'm not asking anything, Nrisingadev continues to say, no, you must ask for something. I want to give you something, please. So finally, he asks for two benedictions. Well, first one, he says that I would have no material desires in my heart, giving that benediction. And Nrisingadev says, you've already got that. That's already there. I don't even have to give you that benediction. You already have no material desire. The second request was for his father. His father, Hiranyakasipu, who tortured him, tried to kill him, murder him in so many ways. He asked for his forgiveness, for him to be saved. In Srimad Bhagavatam 7:10-19, he says, My Supreme Lord, because you are so merciful to the fallen souls, I ask you for only one benediction. I know that my father, at the time of his death, had already been purified by your glance upon him, but because of his ignorance at your beautiful power and supremacy, he was unnecessarily angry at you, falsely thinking that you were the killer of his brother. Thus, he directly blasphemed your lordship, the spiritual master of all living beings, and he committed heavily sinful activities directed against me, your devotee. I wish that he be excused from all of these sinful activities. So this is such a strong example of the mood of Krishna's devotees, this mood of compassion to relieve the suffering of all living entities. Even though he could see Hiranyakasipu as his greatest enemy, he didn't. Out of compassion, he says, please forgive him all of these sinful activities and somehow forgive him and take him back to you. So this is a great example of the Vaishnavacharyas, the great example of devotees who They're always thinking about how to give their mercy to others in this material world who are suffering. Going back to Srila Prabhupada's lectures in Chapter 6 of the Transcendental Teachings of Prahlad Maharaj, Prabhupada says, Prahlad Maharaj now gives his conclusion. My dear friends, because the Supreme Lord is present everywhere, and because we are part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, our duty is to be merciful to all living entities. Prabhupada now says, how can we show our mercy to everyone? There are millions of poor people, so how can we show them all mercy? Are we able to supply clothing and food to all the needy persons of the world? That is not possible. How then can we be merciful to every living entity? By giving them Krishna consciousness. This is the highest mercy. If you want to show any mercy at all to the living entities, then enlighten them in Krishna consciousness, as Prahlad Maharaj did. Otherwise, it is materially beyond your power to show mercy. So this is the highest kindness, the highest mercy, the highest compassion, to give real spiritual life, Krishna consciousness to others. Because even if we help someone materially, and there's nothing wrong with that, but we try to help someone's bodily, we feed somebody, we clothe somebody, we give them some help, how long will that last? Until the next time they're suffering, until the next time that there's some difficulty. And even if somehow we change their whole life and help them through this lifetime, who knows about their next lifetime? Because everyone has to experience old age, disease, and death, and then rebirth. So that no material amount of help can change those things. That's the law of material nature. But by giving somebody Krishna consciousness, by one's becoming spiritually enlightened, they are transcending the cycle of birth and death, being able to get out of this material world and go back to Krishna, going back to the spiritual world. So what greater gift can anyone give than that? What greater mercy can be bestowed? Okay. So last point, complete surrender, faith in Krishna and the protection of the Lord. I don't have a specific verse, single verse, because this was demonstrated by Prahlad his entire life. He dealt with unimaginable adversity. His father tried to kill him, but his faith never wavered, and Krishna always protected him. Interestingly, we might think, well, he always beseeched Krishna, always said, please help me, save me, but he didn't. Prahlad Maharaj actually never directly asked Lord Nrisimhadeva or Krishna to help him. He just chanted Hare Krishna and depended on the mercy of the Lord. Now that's very, very advanced. So that is how spiritually advanced Prahlad Maharaj was, and how he demonstrated that by simply surrendering to Krishna, he was always protected by the Lord. Now, that's one of the symptoms of surrender, actually. They're the six symptoms of surrender. And one is to be fully dependent upon the Lord and to expect their protection. So this is what we should do. We should be in this position. Just expect Krishna to protect us. We have no control, basically, over the material world. We don't know what's going to happen. We can't prevent so many things. All we can do, the only thing we can control, is our consciousness to some degree. We can control our desire. That is the point of free will with the living entity. We have that ability to desire. And we can desire to surrender to Krishna, or we can desire material life, to surrender to Maya. If our desire is to surrender to Krishna, then Krishna will give us protection if it's strong enough. So that's a great lesson for the devotees, how to develop faith to depend upon Krishna and become fully dependent upon him in any circumstances, good or bad. So Lord Nrisimhadeva is that incarnation that specifically protects his devotees. And of course we chant our prayers to Lord Nrisimhadeva every day for the protection of the spiritual master and for the protection of the devotees, for the protection of our temples, for everyone's protection. And many devotees have personally experienced his protection. I think I have a couple of minutes left. I have a personal story which I usually tell every couple of years. Many of you heard it. If you haven't, usually I have a new audience for this one, a few people. This is my Lord Nrisimhadeva story. I was out distributing books back in somewhere in the 1970s, and I was in Potomac, Maryland Temple, and I was out in this parking lot in a shopping center, and this guy comes up to me and asks what I'm doing, and I tell him, and I said, you know, we're doing all this stuff. He says, oh, I've got a bunch, it was near Christmas, so I got a bunch of Christmas presents I can give to some of the kids, or as things I want to give to your church. I go, okay. He says, well, they're out in my car, can you come and get them? I go, okay. So we're walking out to his car, and we're walking and walking and walking way out in the parking lot, away from everybody, and I'm starting to get a little nervous. What's going on here? Finally, we're out there away from everyone. He turns around for me, and to briefly describe this guy, you know, dirty, long hair, beard, scruffy, hadn't bathed for days, you know, you get the picture, and glassy-eyed. He pulls out a gun, sticks it in my stomach, says, give me all your money. I said, okay, no problem. So I had about $40, I handed it to him, and he says, I'm sorry, I'm gonna have to shoot you. And he pulls the trigger, and I didn't even have time to chant, to think anything, but my mind was just completely filled with the image of Lord Nrisimhadev. I just felt surrounded by the energy of Lord Nrisimhadev, and the gun went click, and it jammed, and nothing happened. And he looked down, he got a little confused, a little bewildered, he didn't know quite what to do. And as you can see, I have a little bit of gift for talking. And so I was talking real fast. And so I just started talking to him. I said, you know, God saved me right there. We're doing this stuff and we're trying to really help people and blah, 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 and all of this. And I'm talking to him, and he starts talking, telling me his problems. Now he's a heroin addict, and I'm really sorry. I had to do this. I've got to get money, you know, and going on and on. I'm telling about what we're doing. I'm telling about the temple. And he says, well, that sounds really great. And I hand him a card, and I tell him to come to the Sunday feast. And, you know, we're having this really good talk, you know. So we're on like this. And, you know, then, of course, I start pushing him. First I had to ask him. I was overwhelmed by curiosity. I said, was that gun really loaded? He says, well, it sure worked. The guy I blew away last night. Okay. And he pulls me out, shows me, you know, fully loaded, you know, cartridge. And it just jammed somehow. And, you know, I was talking to him. And then I got a little bold, and I said, could you do one thing? Could you give me the money back? We could really use it, you know. Well... But anyway, then some, you know the famous clunkers, you know, those ones that are, you know, where the muffler doesn't work, the big old ones with the tail fins. This guy comes driving. Another guy looks just like him, only dirtier and scruffier and uglier, and said, hey, let's get out of here. And so he takes off. And so that's the last I saw him. I was a little disappointed. He didn't come to the Sunday feast. I didn't get more opportunity to, you know, discuss the finer points of Krishna consciousness with him. But I have been a very convinced follower and a devotee of Lord Nrisimhadev from that day on. And I fully understand Lord Nrisimhadev's power, his ability to protect us. I feel personally saved by him. And there's many other stories. If I had time, Radha Swami has a fantastic story from Mumbai. But anyway, there's so many great stories. You want to hear it? Okay. Do you all remember when the terrorists attacked Mumbai about 8 years ago or something, 10 years ago, and they were shooting up these hotels and everything was terrible? I think they were Muslim terrorists. And anyway, this was all going on and people being killed. And anyway, one devotee in the congregational devotee in the Mumbai temple was in the police or state police or National Guard or Army, whoever was sent out to confront the terrorists. So they're in a hotel and there's just all this firing and they're totally out armed and outnumbered. And the terrorists are up on the balcony of the hotel, and they're shooting down machine guns at him, and they're throwing these smoke grenades, and the place is filled with smoke, and he can't see a thing, and, you know, there's just shooting going all over the place, and he, you know, he doesn't know what to do, and somehow or another, you know, it's like he's practically seeing his fellow men killed around him, and he has his ringtone on his telephone with the Nrisimha prayers. So he turns it on, and their Nrisimha prayers are playing, and he just doesn't know what to do. Finally, the smoke clears, all the shooting stopped, they left or whatever. He looks around him, all of his fellow soldiers were killed all around him. Right in front of him is a big marble pillar. So he understood that as Lord Nrisingadev broke out of the pillar to save Prahlad Maharaj, Lord Nrisingadev placed this pillar in front of him to save him. Anyway, this was told to me by Radha Swami. I assume it's absolutely true. So anyway, there's so many wonderful stories of Lord Nrisingadev, how he's come to the aid to save his devotees, just as he did with Prahlad Maharaj. So he gives this very special protection. Prahlad Maharaj was only 5 years old, threatened by his father, given this protection by him. And we know, of course, that there are five protected classes. I'm wrapping this up here. Five protected classes in Vedic literature: women, children, cows, the Brahmins, and the elders. These are all groups that should be given special protection. So certainly the children should be protected. And, you know, as many of you know, I was formerly the director of the Child Protection Office. And when I do seminars, I would often ask my audience, the people of my students, they'd say, what was the first original case of child abuse in the history of the world, according to our Vedic literatures? And finally, some will remember Hiranyakasipu. He's the original child abuser trying to kill his 5-year-old son. I mean, what could be worse? You know. So we always, of course, dedicate Nrisingha Chaturdasi, the appearance day of Lord Nrisingadev, we try to dedicate to the cause of child protection and New Raman Reti. And we, of course, we did that Friday, and we had booths and everything going, and more about that. So we do want to remember the protection of the Lord, particularly remember the protection of our children, as well as women, children, cows, Brahmins, and us elders. We all need protection. So very, very special day to remember not only Lord Nrisingadev's protection, but to remember these very wonderful teachings of his great devotee, Prahlad Maharaj. So thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. You're free to leave and line up for prasadam, but if there's a question or two we can take, yes, Mataji? Is there a microphone available for someone to, as we are live on the worldwide net? Web. Great. Okay. It's coming over. Oh, while we're doing it, Chaitanya Maharaj, did you want to say anything or did you want to add anything? Okay, thank you.
Yes, I'm sorry, my voice is so dry. My question is, I'm sure, of course, everything's Krishna arrangement, but how did his mother, who was a great devotee, end up with an atheist father, atheist husband?
The question, I'm sorry, I'm not hearing the question very well.
No, it's just my voice is very dry. Is that better? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, go ahead.
Can you understand? How did his mother, who's a great devotee,
yes,
end up with a father,
yes,
that was atheist?
Uh-huh. Just a question about how his mother was a great devotee?
Yeah,
his mother was a devotee. And the thing, because being the wife of Hiranyakasipu, the demigods, when she was pregnant, they thought, well, they'll have even a greater demon as a son. So they were going to take her away and kill her. But Narada Muni came and convinced them. They said, no, he's actually a devotee. And so he said, let me keep her in my ashram, you know, until the child is born. And then that's where Narada Muni instructed both the mother and, of course, Prahlad as well.
Yeah. I recall that now.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else? Oh, Yamaraj, okay. Prabhu?
Thank you for your class, Tamahara Prabhu. When you first started off, you spoke about us not making, giving our hearts to materialistic people. But I was thinking about it, that as you went on, and then the answers were coming along in terms of, you know, like Srila Prabhupada, he gives his heart to materialistic people. through his pure devotion. So in terms of, we're dealing with materialistic people all the time. So can you expand on...
Yeah, that's a good point. There's a little distinction there. There's a difference between compassion and giving one's heart in the sense that Bhaktivinoda was talking about. In other words, you're not giving your trust, your relationship, your intimate exchanges and all of that with non-devotees. But with those non-devotees, you can certainly give your full heart in terms of compassion, as Srila Prabhupada and Prahlada Maharaj and the Vaishnavas did. And, of course, the Uttama Adhikari actually doesn't see distinction. So in their heart, everyone is the same. Everyone is a devotee of Krishna. But we know that the Uttama Adhikari, they say, descends to the Majjhima platform to preach. Because we have to make the same... Otherwise, why would you preach to anyone? Everyone's a devotee of Krishna. What's the problem? There is no problem. From that very lofty perspective. So one has to actually take the position of the Majjhim where one sees the four categories, the Supreme Lord, the devotees, the innocent, and the atheist, right? So in that sense, the devotee, like Prabhupada, sees those, and there's a different way that we respond to each of those categories. We serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We make friendships with those other devotees. We ignore the atheists or the demoniac people. And to those who are innocent, we give compassion. We extend ourselves and try to help them, Krishna consciousness. So, yeah, it's an interesting question. There's a little bit of subtle distinction there. But it's not quite the same as, say, give your heart in the way that you have a best friend or a family member who's a devotee, that kind of thing. Yeah. Okay. Anyone else? Okay, thank you very much. Prasadam is being served. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.